situation, I'm dealing with it. You're acting like a first-year fucking thief. I'm acting like a professional.
Are you gonna bark all day, little doggy? Or are you gonna bite?
Shit. You shoot me in a dream, you better wake up and apologize.
The Shadow Knows.
Knows, N-O-S-E, big nose.
That's solid, Omar. Holy shit. Took me a while to finally get there, but I get it.
Put some putty on it.
It's a homonym. Because the Shadow Knows, as in having a cognizance of things, and also he has a huge fucking schnoz.
And they made it even bigger.
They made it huge. They made it grotesque.
And the mask couldn't go over the big nose.
The DSLs. Like, they couldn't cover the DSLs of Alec Baldwin.
And no, they covered those up with the...
With the scarf, so they didn't have to do as much work. Yeah.
But most of the movie, the DSLs
were prominent in pouting. Adam, I think Alec Baldwin here in this movie is like his ultimate form, so to speak.
His best? Like, he looked his best?
I think any time after this, you're not seeing him at even close to his best.
Because now he's pretty bloated.
Yeah, he's pretty much a human bag of dog food.
Bloatation device.
And he killed a guy. No, a girl. He killed the director, right?
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
I never found him that good looking. He's got the features. Hairy chest.
Right.
Butt chinian.
Eyes like a Icelandic husky.
You're
like,
right.
Like ice blue.
Dark.
Ice blue eyes.
Dark haired fella.
Sicilian haircut. Looks like a fucking Mako shark.
And like a perfectly raspy voice.
Very whispery.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like a very sultry sort of talking always.
Why couldn't he pull it off? Did he pull it off for...
The Shadow? I think he pulled it off for like two movies. And then the rest he either got typecasted or put into these really ridiculous roles that... Not even necessarily ridiculous roles, but like just movies that didn't end up working in hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
Like this was supposed to be a huge break leading to a franchise film series like Superman. Like there were literally contracts signed for like doing more films. And as we've talked about, the $40 million budget. We should probably mention the movie we're doing.
I think we have. We just haven't done an intro yet.
Well, maybe we'll get there now. This is Slob Cinema. Omar and AJ.
Yo.
And today was AJ's pick. And the film we watched was 1994's The Shadow, starring Alec Baldwin, Penelope Ann Miller, Peter Boyle, Tim Curry, and Ian McKellen.
McClellan.
Directed by... Russell Mulcahy.
Alec Baldwin had a pretty good career, though, dude.
Okay, well,
he has a good career. Until after the The verdict.
the first break was him calling his daughter a pig, right? Then he eventually got the 30 Rock gig.
His Twitter game was fire, I heard. And did he get canceled off Twitter?
I don't know. Like, now, as related to, like, the current predicament he's in?
No, before then, yeah.
I don't know. That's a good question.
I think he was battling with people or, like, just insulting people.
Calling everyone a pig.
Okay, Alec Baldwin, actor in...
My name right?
Glengarry, Glenn Ross, Pearl Harbor.
My first name.
Still Alice. Along came Polly.
Alec is a popular name in the early 90s.
So your name is AJ, first name Alec?
Correct.
Alec John?
No.
Alec James.
Named after nobody. No, John is my father, James is my uncle. You want to know the name I got?
What you get?
Justin, who's nobody.
Justin. Yustin.
Mm-hmm. As in, just in time, never.
Cats and dogs for Alec Baldwin. Oh, God,
okay. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty big step down right
the
there.
The Edge.
I like that movie. Let's say David Mamet joint.
Miami Blues.
Good movie. Directed by the same guy who did Gross Point Blank.
Not a bad career, man. Not a bad looking guy.
I don't think they ever made the amount of money he wished his movies would make, though.
Pluto Man.
He does have a cameo in... yeah, Pluto Nash. Yeah, he does have a cameo in that.
And Thomas and the Magic Railroad. But, dude, I just...
His next credits are just like voice of Sammy the Squirrel.
I like them...
Tommy the Turtle.
He's probably, like, really good-looking in person or something.
I don't know. I think he's definitely dropped in overall looks, I'd say.
He's got
lots of old people growths all over his face now.
It might just be a problem that I have with him, but I do enjoy a lot of his work, so I can't even hate.
Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah, and that just dropped on Netflix again.
Oh, sweet. Love that movie.
Good for a rewatch if you haven't seen it.
Hunt for Red October.
But you might not want to watch it because a bunch of white guys.
Yeah, there's no like women in the movie.
A bunch of old white guys in collared shirts yelling. They like have
careers and make money, so they're evil.
Yeah. So this movie, we haven't seen it in a while. 1995.
Four.
94.
Yeah. I double-checked that, but let's face it, when you're talking the 90s, there's like 0% difference between 94, 95, and 96. They might as well be one combined year, because all the movies that came out in those 3 years are like exactly this.
Very formative years for you, it seems like, dude. You like a lot of movies from that year, those years?
It was kind of in that overlap where I was... a young enough person to be just watching, you know, a typical latchkey kid, just like always, like get home from school, nobody's home, turn on the TV,
jerk it,
eventually turn on the TV, see what's on, blah blah blah. So I mean, there was like always something on that I would remember or see, but particularly the mid 90s, like it was that overlap where my brothers were old enough to see the PG-13 R-rated popular movies of 95 to 2001. That I got to sneak in on.
Would they rub it in sometimes if you weren't able to watch the movie, or were you always able?
No, they were well aware that I was sneaking into the basement to watch the movie with them when I shouldn't be,
mm-hmm.
and they would just like be cool with that. Mm. The only thing I remember is seeing Gladiator at like whatever 9, 10, and my brother covering my eyes for the weird brother sister scene in that movie.
Because of incest or because of...
Yeah, weird sex.
Sexual...
Same with Raging Bull. Like, he covered my eyes during, like, the...
Joe Pesci kissed
the fuck scene.
Robert De Niro.
Yeah, especially that. But no, like, the part where, like, he's like, got to put, like, a bucket of ice on his dick or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it was always, like, covered eyes for that.
Really?
But so, I could see, like, the bloodiest shit. Imagine, like, I saw the opening scene of Gladiator. I saw the boxing scenes of Raging Bull all before I was 11.
That's very common, like, American, they would let the violence roll, just no sex.
Well,
no.
You know, my dad's gold card routine.
You told me.
Involved the, like, sir, you know this movie is rated R, mm-hmm. right? And, like, looking behind at me, like, little, like, 8-year-old. And they're like, you know this is rated R, sir? And my dad would be like, well, there's, like, sex stuff in it, right? And, like, that was the only question that mattered.
SSC, strong sexual content.
Right. It couldn't be, like, brief. Yeah. It couldn't be, like, brief nudity. It had to be, like, strong sexual content.
But, I mean, it was softcore.
Which one?
Pretty much all the Angelina Jolie movies.
Oh, yeah.
Early 2000s. Hot movies she was coming out in.
No, she did get a boob job for a movie, so.
Was that it?
She got a boob job for the first Tomb Raider to make her
God
yabos bigger.
I thought those were just like, it was like a bra or something.
Surgery, dude. And then she had him, like...
Reduced
for that? The second one, yes. Really? It's a true story. Look it up. It's real. She, like, got boob implants and took them out for the same franchise.
Huh.
Yeah.
Then Wanted. She was really skinny in that one.
Yeah, she was like... Yeah, that was like... Damn, are you eating, like, a fucking cup of water a day or what?
What was going on?
I don't know.
What is going on with
Angelina Jolie? What's going on with Brad and Angelina's winery? Who owns it? Who's getting the money?
They're not together anymore.
No, but they're fighting over assets these days. I don't know why I know that. I just have seen it in the news.
Mm-hmm. You'll be checking out those Us Weeklies. Those are still around?
It's People Magazine. Oh. Thank you.
Oh. The best people.
I wouldn't say that.
1994 for The Shadow.
Directed by Russell Mulcahy.
I can't say that. Okay, so Alec Baldwin, he's a superstar for you. You love him. You would hug him if you saw him in person.
I'd be like, thank you for your service, sir, for whatever you might have done in the past. Okay. I'm looking at a poster of... No.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The concept is he just... He gains this power.
So he was a warlord genocidal maniac
mm-hmm.
after World War I and began an opium fiefdom
mm-hmm.
and was presumably a terribly brutal killer leader.
Mm-hmm. With long hair.
With long hair and weird long wig. Painted weird chipped fingernails that he used to scoop up like opium and meat.
He got to show off the chest hair in that one.
Yeah, his fucking orangutan chest.
Looking good, man. Looking good in that time. But yeah, that's when he was like a warlord. You said opium warlord.
Opium warlord.
And but when he ends up being the Shadow, like the pretty much synopsis, his powers is he can, in the shadows, he sees or... He brings out the evil into the light, or is that how it works? Or
he's
in the shadows.
Like or? He can't ever get rid of his shadow, so he becomes the shadow of mankind because he knows the dark heart of humanity. I don't know. Sounds pretty fucking mm-hmm. stupid.
Well, it says based on a 1930s comic strip.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said a radio show too.
Radio
right?
serial, yeah. Who? Wisconsin native Orson Welles often narrated. And damn. Who Wisconsin native David Koepp from Pewaukee wrote this movie.
Orson Welles just slept in the studio. They're just like, here, dude, record this shit, too.
He was like, the finest French wine.
He said, it puts the hero up against his arch enemy, Jiwon Khan. Who's he's a descendant
of... The latest living descendant of Genghis Khan.
Okay. Which is... Definitely sounds like something out of a comic book, for sure. Do you think that worked? Yes or no? Or do you want to... Or is that part of your review? I don't want to cut into that too much.
The fact that he was like a descendant of Genghis Khan and that was his whole sort of
yeah
how ethos was just I'm going to be the new Genghis Khan.
How'd you feel about that? Or
it doesn't make a lot of sense. He's like, I'm going to be emperor of mankind. How will I do that? Set off a nuclear bomb in New York.
It definitely feels like of its time.
But, like, they're very just villainy things, so it doesn't really matter that...
Yeah.
He, you know, it doesn't... I think it's a very 30s idea. Like, what if the guy who killed most of the world came back?
Right.
And tried to do the same.
And then a zeppelin comes in.
And then he gets a shard of glass in the head and gets a lobotomy.
That was wild, dude. What a wild movie. We're skipping way ahead,
yeah. But, I mean, I think the idea
spoilers
of...
Spoilers for the...
I think the idea of the villain is strong enough.
Mm-hmm.
What didn't work was his terrible prosthetic beard.
You could see the glue, but I don't know if that's just...
it was like falling off most of the time.
Blu-ray, the beautiful Blu-ray pixelations on the TV.
Very possible.
Really well
or
done.
Or it just always looked terrible, and they were like, well, fuck.
Mm-hmm. What memories you got with this? Any more memories? I don't have many with this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was telling Omar earlier, this is a favorite of my mom's. For the very few times she joined the family and watching a movie instead of reading in her little sunroom there.
So when you guys would play a movie, she would go read.
Mainly, she was not there.
Okay.
Yeah. But the time she was there was for movies like the Indiana Jones, James Bonds, Romancing the Stone,
adventure,
excitement, action movies, and then she really dug these series of 90s comic strip movies, Dick Tracy,
mm-hmm.
Rocketeer, The Phantom, The Shadow, The Mask, even, you know, a lot of these sort of period where there are 90s films taking place in the 30s or 40s.
And usually...
But using like 90s cinematic style.
And a Tommy gun is usually shot off in every one of those movies.
And the fedoras and... Yeah, she...
Nazis.
Nazis, big one. Fighting Nazis.
Mm-hmm. What are those pants? They're like khaki pants and they got the really big... you usually see people...
Pockets? Cargo pants?
Desert setting and they're like really... They stick out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
And you're like riding a camel with those pants on. But anyways, this was your pick, an AJ pick?
This was an AJ pick, yeah.
That's what I was trying to ask, like, why?
I think it's just, I don't know what fucking night it was and why I had this idea, but I was like, you know what I haven't seen in a while? And honestly, my first thought was, is there even a Blu-ray for this movie? Because it seems like such a niche 90s thing that maybe they never made like anything beyond the like bare bones standard def DVD. But sure enough, they've actually made a couple of Blu-ray versions. I got the version I researched and thought was best, but it was basically like, what could be a movie that maybe Omar hasn't seen in a long time and is entertaining?
I like the poster, man. That's what I was thinking. The Alec has to have this poster in his house somewhere. Maybe even in his bathroom.
Maybe in his bathroom so he can, like, piss on it.
Just somewhere. But it looks good, man. It made him look good. And have you looked at anything about the comics? Or was there a big thing as a comic? Or
supposedly,
only...
yeah. It was big like Dick Tracy was big. Like, it was one of those comics with, like, only four huge panels. And that mm-hmm. was all they had to make. The other thing that kind of reminds me of this sort of ilk is the DC hero. What's his face with the blank face? Oh, fuck. I just had it.
Mm-hmm.
God damn it.
A DC guy?
Yeah. The Question.
Oh, uh-huh.
He wears just the blank face, but he wears, like, a fedora and the mm-hmm. shit, like the noir shit. That almost kind of intertwines in these sort of stories where it's, like, a very basic element makes them a quote-unquote hero, comic hero. I will say, out of most of them, presumably the Shadow seems the most with actual superpowers of some kind.
Using his powers of invisibility and the power to cloud men's minds, the Shadow comes blazing to the city's rescue with explosive results.
I wonder where George Lucas got his idea for Jedi mind tricks from.
Wasn't it Frank Herbert or Frank, what was the dude? The Dune guy?
Yeah, that's Frank Herbert. You got it right.
The Dune dude. Penelope Ann Miller also starring in this. Who? Oh, Carlito's Way. That's another.
That's one. That's the first one everybody really noticed her in, which I own on the deluxe Arrow box set.
So what's she been up to, man?
I don't know. Do you have her page up? Because I honestly don't. Deceased. Don't remember. I don't.
No, I'm just kidding. nothing really. I mean, her last. Let me go.
Like to, honestly, the last thing I can remember is The Relic.
And that was like 97.
97, yeah.
Well, she did The Artist.
Oh.
She was in that.
Academy Award for Best Picture. Unbelievable that that happened, but it did.
I remember the big deal about that. And then The Birth of a Nation, the Nate Parker. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was in that. Probably a racist white lady.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think she swayed her hips as much as she did in this movie, in that movie?
She never curled around furniture better than in this movie.
Jesus, dude. All we needed
lips
her...
Lips always on display.
Like, her and Baldwin's lips were on display, but she did sway, man, and she just needed to spin around some shit, some furniture, like you said, and be all set, man. But other than that, very... It's like I said, Naomi Watts kind of took her place and at some
like
point.
Like a more charismatic blonde bombshell.
Yeah.
Like Penelope Ann Miller, I mean, I like her in the movies that I remember her in, but her acting ability is not like the thing I remember. You know what I mean?
Other than The Relic, her acting, I tolerate her in The Relic, but I haven't seen The Relic in 15 years, which...
Right.
I wouldn't mind revisiting that one for the show. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe another one where it'd be like, why did you pick this one? It's another.
Roger Ebert for the Chicago Sun-Times gave the film 3 out of 4 stars.
And what, The Relic or The Shadow?
The Shadow.
Okay.
I'll look up The Relic after this. The Shadow gave 3 out of 4 stars. If you respond to film noir, if you like dark streets and women with scarlet lips, this movie will work some kind of magic.
I agree with that. It does work a magic on you, the production value. We can talk about that for a little bit because that's probably what elevates the movie. Baldwin doesn't even elevate the movie to the level that the production value and the miniatures and the costumes, the attention to detail.
We're going to talk about some of that in a little bit.
Asian influence.
Brian Lowry of Variety wrote that despite similarities, The Shadow lacks the visceral appeal of Batman and won't strike the same chord. So my question is, does this come close to striking the Batman chord?
Of course. Yes, of course. Tim Burton's, he squirted all over everyone in the 90s, and you could tell everyone's trying to like do it, but their own style. This is another one where it's like they're not doing it gothic style.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like a Batman movie. And we were questioning, could Alec Baldwin be a Batman?
Right.
I don't think so. But that's because I'm sort of hating on him, honestly, but not trying to. I don't think he would work as Bruce Wayne. He's more of a shadow. He's my shadow. He's the shadow. But the aesthetic is there, dude. Very detailed cities. But this was New York, or Chicago, New York, right? Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't have the fantastical aspect to it, right. But it sort of did.
Yeah.
But it's only because the 40s, the 30s,
it's
and
more
the 40s.
Realistic because it's playing to a specific period, whereas the Batman 89 is like all periods. Mm. That's the whole point of the sort of
right
surreality of it all.
Right,
like,
okay,
you know, there's like steampunk shit, but then there's like modern shit over here, and
mm-hmm.
a guy wearing a fedora over here and a guy wearing a leather jacket over here
and a Tommy gun. Definitely I saw a Tommy gun.
Mm-hmm. And big ass 45s, big shiny silver 45s that match his fucking silver eyes when he's reading people's minds.
It looks good. It very underwhelming in the movie, though, unfortunately.
Which part? Oh, the guns,
the
underused.
Guns. Yeah. But he had powers.
Well, it had to be only so violent, it still was PG-13.
Oh, yeah, and he had the Jedi powers where you imagine like a Jedi who doesn't use his lightsaber much.
Yeah, the lightsaber. I mean, much again, Lucas, you fucking dirty thief. like a Jedi only uses his lightsaber in the very last consequence because violence. You know, they're supposed to be
Obi-Wan.
Yeah, right. So in that same way, the Shadow would more than likely rely on convincing you not to do something than forcibly making you do something. Mm-hmm. However, he does toss a lot of Asian men out windows in this movie.
And he can go invisible, right?
Correct.
And
but he's like the Predator. Like, you can see evidence of his movement.
Yeah, and go into the shadows, and then has, like, shiny eyes.
Mm-hmm. The film always has a cool effect, which, by the way, do you know who the DP on this movie was?
No.
Stephen Burham.
And he's
De Palma's guy.
Okay.
Is that Snake why... Snake Eyes, Mission Impossible, the fucking... all of his 90s shit.
I was going to bring up De Palma because they would do the close-up of the head, the face, and then in the background it was a little...
Split diopter.
Yeah. Where that's like what it is? Really, is yeah, that what it is?
That's the De Palma technique.
Split diopter.
Yep.
Okay.
Where it's like you're seeing like a dude's face that looks like it's like an inch from the camera, but you're still seeing in clarity the background.
Yep.
And oftentimes it's because the diopter is put right where the clearest vertical line may appear in the film. So like you'll actually see the minuscule blur of the
delineation on the actual film.
Yeah.
Wow. All that work to make a shot like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I did notice
now that... digital cameras just do it all for you, but back in the day, you used to have to literally make a physical thing that would change the focal length.
Man. I was going to bring that up, but I was already kind of making fun of the movie kind of being a little derivative, but like the Tim Burton and the... A few shots here and there, but of course, the De Palma was... Say it again.
Stephen H. Burham?
Split diopter?
Split diopter.
I've heard that before in a pod, and I was like, dude, I got to look that up, and I forgot to. And when you brought that up, it kind of... It was a light bulb that went off. But anyways, any more feelings towards this as far as it being your pick or... Well, I mean, we broke the movie down, sort of, but I mean, we can...
Basically, the film is just, let me see if I wanted to name some other Stephen Burham movies for you, so you can get a sense that this guy is really visually...
The cinematographer guy?
You were commenting even on this old-ass bare-bones Blu-ray that looks good. The Entity, The Outsiders, Rumblefish.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that. Here's
where De Palma starts, Body Double. St. Elmo's Fire with Schumacher, 8 Million Ways to Die. The Untouchables, Casualties of War. War of the Roses, Raising Kane, Carlito's Way, The Shadow, Mission Impossible, Snake Eyes, Mystery Men, Mission to Mars. That's basically his hits there.
Mm.
So, really talented cameraman. Obviously, we saw a lot of trickery in this film in the way that light shifts and changes to show the effectiveness of the Shadow's powers, whether he's reading somebody's mind or casting himself onto a wall... Or, you know, anything like that. The it's glossy. It's a nice glossy Hollywood picture.
Mm-hmm. How close are the director is the director with the DP? Like they gotta be like just there like around each other the whole time, essentially, when the movie's being made?
I think it depends on the director and the cameraman on how things operate. There's always stories of how the director of photography is basically in charge of the camera position and movement. So unless he holds
the camera.
Right, but unless something is specifically told to him by the director, he's going to do what he thinks is best for the scene. So you could have some weak-wristed director being like, yeah, do whatever you got to do to shoot this scene. Or you could have somebody like, you know, Ridley Scott, Quentin Tarantino... Even somebody like M. Night Shyamalan, where they specifically instruct and inform the way that the camera moves. Because basically...
Like dolly shots or whatever. Right.
And position of people cranes. In the frame and everything. Like what kind of shot they're going to do.
And the guys just got to execute it.
Right.
or storyboards, or because Zack Snyder's a storyboard guy, Edgar Wright, and he'll draw it out, or who else? There's Ridley Scott draws out. Yeah, yeah, storyboards.
Every single fucking documentary you watch on any of
them. He's like, look.
He's like, I can draw real good. I draw my storyboards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, he's always like drawing shit and making the frames and stuff, which that does help, especially in these new days of pre-visualization. But I think it's probably even more vital in older movies like The Shadow, where things are much more basic technologically speaking, like the mail through the pipes that go through the entirety of New York is like a crazy sequence for 1994.
Yeah, that was impressive. That was impressive.
You said Raimi-esque, but also like that. I mean that borders on like Spider-Man swinging through the city,
right?
Stuff which Raimi, was done like, you know, 7 years later.
Yeah, dude. It's and before that, what was it? Just Evil Dead.
Yeah, the Evil Dead's Army of Darkness.
Dude, there was like a lot, but it wasn't. It like sometimes some people don't know how to cover it up. You know, Tarantino is a master at making a movie that's like derivative of many things, and there's such deep cuts that, like, the mainstream people, most of the people watching the movie aren't even going to notice. They're going to be like, man, this shit, it's going to feel original to them. Unless you're just like a super crazy cinephile like you, where you would like pick up on all the little subtle nods, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But there would be such deep cuts where it's like you hope no one really notices, like, oh, dude, this guy's so obvious. Because that's what your guy George Lucas did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he got away with it.
I beg to differ, sir.
Yeah, so what you looking up there?
The set director.
Uh-huh.
So we are so impressed with the...
Yeah.
With production. The dressings. The costumes are separated. But basically, this is all comes down to like set directing. I'll just say like the two most crazy credits this guy has for set decoration is Steven Spielberg's Hook and Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. So yeah. This guy goes all out.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
This guy goes hard in what he's like going to put in the frame and how it's going to look.
And these people... and that was the cinematographer or the
production? That was the set director.
Set director.
So the way the rooms look and all the shit that's in them.
And imagine, they're probably like a history buff or like a visual, like an art historian, because they would have to know kind of, like, man, how would you be able to even do that job at a high level? But it would be fun and creative and imaginative.
And the production designer is a guy named Joseph Nemec III,
mm-hmm.
who was the production designer for Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Dude, see?
So this quality production cinematographer, designer? What's it?
Production designer for Terminator 2?
Yep. What?
Dude.
Yep.
So he was the one who picked all the trucks and the helicopters the leather and motorcycles. And
where they're shooting and how the streets look. And
for real? Oh, wow. See? So directors get a lot of credit.
Yep.
But
it's a collaborative art form.
Exactly. And the fact that so many people came together to make like some masterpieces, some... But the director is the one who's running the show. Essentially, it's their creation.
Well, it's like if you're listening to any... by the way, I recommend film commentaries, people.
Yes.
Listen to them, use them, you're learn
big,
from them.
You're a big advocate.
Huge commentary guy. I've probably listened to every movie that I have that has a commentary. I've listened to that fucking commentary.
And if people who are listening, if you love those type of things, reach out, send an email to AJ. Yeah. We'd love to talk or give us some talking points. You know,
but basically every single one of them, any director that's not full of bullshit, like a Michael Bay, is like, it's a collaborative art form. I couldn't have made the movie without this. I literally couldn't have made it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but at the end of the day, they also usually say like, at the end of the day, if anyone's going to get blamed for a movie, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's mine, because if it fails, it's all on me. It's not on you. And if it succeeds, it's all on me. It's not on you.
Mm-hmm. So they're kind of like a coach too, like a sports team.
I think really, yeah.
Coach. Hmm. But man,
David Fincher has that really good quote. I was talking to you. I did the Welcome to the Basement fellow Wisconsin podcast and YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
Had that 5-day immersion movie challenge or.
Yeah, they like doing
immersion test.
So you watch the same movie
5 days in a row.
5 days in a row, just to see it in different aspects, or
just to you just gotta soak see what it happens. In different.
Yeah. I would do that. I would try it.
But I did that with that David Fincher's Zodiac recently.
Mm-hmm. What made you pick that?
It's a masterpiece. I've always loved it. I've always thought it's his best movie.
You just wanted
and then
to watch
I was just
it.
Like, I heard this shit on. Welcome to the Basement, and then I think not too long ago one of my follows on podcast did a Zodiac episode, and I was just like, let's do it.
Were you doing, so like front, like beginning to end, or were you falling asleep sometimes?
Nope.
Or you
awake
just
every time.
Beginning in a...
Yep.
Okay.
It's so that good.
What'd you get out of it? And you definitely should comment on a video or send them, they respond, dude. Because if you see like that they've got probably what, like a certain amount, like thousands of subscribers. They're not like super popular.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you commented or sent them a message like, man, I did the 5-day with Zodiac. This is what I noticed. Boom, boom, boom. You know, they'd probably appreciate that, or they'd probably comment back or say, oh, man, you know.
Yeah.
But go ahead. My bad.
But so my point in interjecting that little piece is that David Fincher has this great quote about film directing, and he says, I'm going to get it slightly wrong, but he says something along the lines of, like, directing is like standing 100 feet away from a guy with a paintbrush and telling him how to create the frame.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, being a director is like being so far put away from the actual creation that you have to communicate so, you know, intrinsically within your detailed that you're telling a guy who's 100 feet away from you how to paint a painting.
You're a motivator.
You're like a guy who spends every day instructing and saying
instructing.
Yes or no.
Yeah, yes or no. Wow. But like, see, but I'm trying to find like the artistry in that. Or is he just managing? And then you got the DP, you got the... Then the production designers, the visual effects, those are like kind of the nerdy artists.
Well, and what's weird is that Fincher was one of the first of the major name guys, you know, the P.T. Andersons, the Wes Andersons, the blah, blah, blah. All those guys, he was the first guy to go digital, actually.
Mm.
Zodiac was filmed digitally. It wasn't on celluloid.
Mm.
And he did that because... That way with Fincher, if anyone knows anything about David Fincher, he's a...
If anyone knows.
But he loves many, many takes. Mm. And so with digital filmmaking, you can just see a take, delete it because you don't like it, and then move on. Mm. Whereas in a film, it's printed, it costs money, it takes up time, blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
So I think that was where that kind of sort of situation came
from. He's a smart guy, huh?
He's almost intimidatingly smart, and I don't know if that's... entirely just his smugness.
No, I don't find... See, I find Nolan more smug than...
Well, Nolan's definitely smug.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe, like Aaron Sorkin.
Fincher is less so, but I don't know if it's an act or not, is how I'll put it.
It's because of his little goatee, right?
Yeah, it's very mysterious.
Perfectly thin goatee.
You know, disconcerting.
It's like, bro, you got like a Puerto Rican person goatee.
Like, how do you still have a goatee in 2024? What's going on?
It's like perfectly trimmed. Like, he trims it every morning.
Yeah.
Like, It's like very intricate.
He's like the only white man I've seen wear a goatee and not look like a total sleazebag.
It's like his movies. They're very, like, perfectly cut and edited.
I'm going to treat Zodiac like I treat my goatee.
So, like, okay, but...
I don't know. So, that was a film... That was, to go all the way around to back to your original thing, that was a quote about how it's like to direct and what that encompasses when you have so many talented hands at your disposal. Like, even if you're only a 50-50 director, but you got a set director that's like this guy, and a production designer that's like this guy, and a cinematographer that's this guy, you know, I think everything becomes more shorthand than it would be normally.
Why is Zodiac worth watching 5 days in a row, though? Like, I want to know.
It's so fucking good.
Okay.
It's like a warm blanket. If your mind works in such ways where, you know, you have such anxiety and worry about the workings of things and what's going to happen and what's going to take place, and then you watch a movie that everything is entirely planned out, set, you know, structured, investigatory, you see the process unfolding in a very logical way, it like comforts you.
And it also makes you...
Also, it's a weird serial killer film.
It also weirds you out because how it did work out. And it's like, how can someone so smart, they kind of figured this out, that it would go down and it would work out the way they wanted it to. But sometimes you think people are ahead of their time too, where they take advantage of how gullible and green everyone is. And like just the time you imagine... Can you imagine walking around, and when was he doing this? The 60s?
69 to 72,
approximately. 69 to 72, and you're imagine walking around in a neighborhood. You could teleport to that time, take your headphones, and just walk around. You would feel so safe, happy.
I'm telling you, dude, you need to watch this movie. I was surprised you didn't own it.
I'm going to rewatch
it. I'm going to have to buy it for you, because I don't want you to be watching it on streaming. I want you to be watching it like... the best optimal way possible.
It's
also an extremely gorgeous movie. I think it might be the last movie DP Harris Savides did for Fincher, who also did like The Game.
So Jake Gyllenhaal, Robert Downey.
Yep. Mark Ruffalo. Chloe Sevigny.
That's one I think I've probably seen it like twice. What is it, 2003, 4, something like that?
2007.
Seven?
I know, because I was super pissed because I couldn't get in, and it was the last year before I couldn't get in for R-rated movies.
Yeah, dude.
And I was afraid of that.
Yeah, I didn't see that one in theater. I caught that one on HBO, I think.
I was 15, dude.
Yeah, dude. I gotta rewatch it. It's on Netflix, though, dude.
Yeah, but the...
Is it such a sin if I watch it on Netflix?
Go fuck yourself, you son of a bitch. Yo, let me watch it on the shitty streaming with lower resolution than I could have on a Blu-ray that my friend will buy me.
It's easy. You don't need to spend money on me.
I know, but I like
to. We can stick it to the... spend money
your on your silks me. And perfumes.
Yeah. What? Incense and myrrh.
Peppermint.
Like olden time spices, like I brought you cinnamon. Like, what the fuck? This dude keep bringing me cinnamon.
But I don't know what else.
I don't know, man. You tell me.
I just think it's just the shadow is the shadow has a floozy. It has a woman whose only meaning is to be the woman draped over a couch or chair and look sexy in a dress. It has the noir hero with the 245s. It has the seedy, scummy guys. It has the brilliant scientist. It has the obviously ethnic villain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really, for a 1994 movie, it is kind of a special effects extravaganza. Like we've been saying, it has lots of... I would say ostensibly the worst part is the CGI knife monster.
It still works. My brain doesn't really malfunction. And it's like, what is this? It's like, oh.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I also think, like, anyone younger than us might be like, that looks like fucking shit.
And they're going to be like, who is this Asian?
But the mix of miniatures and matte paintings, especially on the bridge sequence in the beginning, and all the really unique angles that they have in this movie... sometimes even have me wondering, like, where's the matte plate and how does it cut into this set? Because it's so off kilter and comic booky that I think that's the ultimate strength of the movie, is that feels comic booky.
Yeah, it does.
It feels like you're turning the pages in a comic book with the iconography, the shots, the way people are looking at the camera, the sort of characteristic stereotypes that are in the movie. I love when they go into the Cobalt Club and everything's just silver, black, or blue. That's it. I love the sort of pre-industrial sort of James Bond secret rooms, secret, you know, every fucking room's got a fireplace and a library in this movie, which is awesome. I think Alec Baldwin does a good job of being a sort of stoic hero, even though they do have the weird face morphs between like the sort of rat version of Alec Baldwin and the regular version of Baldwin, which I get they're trying to match like the image of the comics supposedly, but I haven't seen any of those, so I can't tell for sure. But it ultimately is supposed to be like his sort of disguise, like his mask. But instead of having an actual mask, he just has like a morphed face, I guess. Let me think. Yeah, the cars, the set dressing, the wet city street look of the back lots of Universal where this was shot. The Biff Bam Pows of comic book fighting. Mm-hmm. You know, like Omar said, the guns aren't really used as much as we'd like, but it's sort of still really cool iconography, especially I mentioned the fact that how much work would go into even the cheesiest of effects, which is in this movie the sort of cartoon black spot that represents the figure of the shadow on the stairs or on the wall. And that whole process is so much work that it sort of makes you, even if you don't necessarily love the movie, appreciate the sort of effort that went into it. I don't know. I suppose this is just a real love affair with the 90s sort of pulp comic aesthetic run that ran from, you know, Batman to, let's face it, was killed by the Matrix. I mean, basically all in there, you have multiple attempts at this kind of movie where people are sort of... it's more of an adventure action movie with a guy with little to no actual superpowers and more or less just a sort of guy that looks a certain way and he fights bad guys. So I think it's underrated ultimately. It's probably the last super high budget Hollywood picture that Russell Mulcahy got to direct before getting sent into B-movie and lower stuff. I actually do recommend the Teen Wolf MTV series that he had a major part in creating and directing quite a few of the better episodes, but sort of got banished to TV land and really low-budget action movies after the flop of this movie, which, like we've mentioned earlier, was costing about $40 million and only made, like, $48 million. So, the shadow fucking knows, Omar.
Does it?
He genders as he, him.
He, him, and he knows what you're doing. Like Santa Claus, like Jesus.
Like Elvis.
He had those silver eyes. But yeah, man, thanks for ranting for a while. I had to excuse myself. I had to go into the shadows and piss.
Did the shadow show his nose to you?
The piss. That's my.
The nose popped out of the wall and started pissing.
The piss nose. But are we on ratings yet? No, of course no, not. Right?
We're really just talking. I gave my whole spiel on the movie, and you're going to give yours. Your cumulative thoughts.
Cumulative. I loved production design was probably the top thing, which we just like touched on. Alec Baldwin's never been my bag, but it's because I like the brawny guys in the 80s and 90s. Even like someone like Ray Liotta, recently I watched No Escape.
Oh, great, 1994.
And not
Stuart
a...
Stuart Wilson.
Is yeah, another one of your mid-90s mm-hmm. type of bags.
Love it, love it.
And he wasn't a brawny guy either, but he worked because he was able to act psychotic and weird.
And what, like, was that, what was No Escape on?
Arrow no. streaming, yeah.
Oh, you pay for that?
No, I had a trial.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. I used up the trial watching a bunch of Asian movies. And it works sometimes, and with Alec Baldwin, it works in that Bruce Wayne type of situation, like we said, the Batman way, and with Tim Burton, what he did in 89, it kind of set the tone for a lot of other movies, And we even talked about Phantom, the mm-hmm. Phantom with Billy Zane, mm-hmm. which is another one
directed by another Australian director, Jeff Murphy, I think.
Huh. And then you said this guy.
This guy's also Australian, Russell Mulcahy.
And he did Razor. Oh shit, Razorback, right?
Yep.
And that's one where I just bought that, but I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. Well, maybe you should watch it together. Maybe it's a pick.
I hear good things about it, so why I bought it.
It's like Jaws with a boar.
Blindly, yeah. What I wanted to do was watch Razorback and then White Buffalo I saw with Charles Bronson.
Oh, I've been tempted to buy that movie just because it looks so fucking ridiculous.
It's on Tubi or something.
Okay.
So I want to do like
a double feature. I know they have a Kino Blu-ray of that.
Double feature with that.
But it's like, from the creators of Jaws comes the White Buffalo, and it's just like a buffalo being like, brr!
And I'll let you borrow Alligator. That's another yep. one where it's mm-hmm. like the Jaws type of
situation. And you got the Steelbook Anaconda.
Anaconda, which could be a pick one day.
I hope.
And maybe the next one.
You know what you're doing on this river?
We need the John Voight impersonations right away, dude. But yeah.
You never look into the eyes of the man you kill. It haunts our dreams.
And speaking of, I mean, you always make me think of Guillermo del Toro, but this had a little Guillermo in it. You know, you could kind of see, like, the attention to detail and, like, the density. Mm-hmm. Of like just the production design. I really think that's what makes this movie like shine. Some of the acting is a little spotty. The bad guys not I don't know, it was kind of a weird choice. I don't know, but they were basing it on the serials, right? The comic, yeah. Mm-hmm. In the 1930s stuff, so I have to kind of keep it in that context. Like, of course, it's like some old
yeah Asian shit. Man equals bad.
Like, let's use Genghis Khan. Like, what the fuck? But yeah, I get it. And Genghis Khan was like probably one of the worst people to ever live.
Probably
worse than Adolfo. Adolfo.
Adolfo. Your friend.
So, but that's my feelings without giving any ratings. I mean,
okay.
It's a conundrum.
Yeah, we're going to watch this movie again?
Maybe with a child present. Or maybe when we're old and you're going to be like, let's watch The Phantom again. Or not The Phantom, The Shadow. But there's a lot of Baldwin, not a lot of Phantom. And I guess they keep that for Blue Ball's sake. They want to just keep it in the dark, in the shadows.
The shadow knows.
The shadow blows.
He did have. There was that weird poster with smoking the cigarette where the guy's mouth was like a perfect open O.
Penelope Ann Miller. What do you think of her acting skills?
Poor.
Penelope. That's a beautiful name, though.
Hmm.
Penelope
Ann. More like Penelope Bland Miller.
Ooh, shit, son.
Yeah. Take that fucking shit. Retired actress.
The Shad Blow. Now, is this your favorite movie of all time?
Definitely in the top five.
Top five. Why no Shadow sequels?
It made for very little money.
You said it, $40 million. That's pretty good, though. And they did good with $40 million.
For instance, Jurassic Park in 1993, 1 year before this movie, that movie cost only $63
million. Wow.
And this cost $40 million.
Wild.
Mm-hmm.
I just bought the 4K.
We gotta watch all those shitty Jurassic World movies together and get super fucked up.
Jurassic Park 3 on 4K.
Joe that, Johnson.
That'd be a good time.
You can see William H. Macy getting...
God.
Yeah.
He had his mustache.
he like had that mustache after Fargo. He's like, what movie can I be in where I still have a mustache? And they were like, Jurassic Park 3? And he
was
like,
Tierra yeah, sure. Leone was in that. What is it? Did I say it right?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Rampant, remember?
Rampant.
Rampant. Rapid.
Rapid.
Well, can we get to ratings, or do you have any more to speak on? Oh, we didn't talk about any movies that we watched, but that's okay.
We talked about, I did the 5-day, I was going to bring this to you tonight, but I didn't want to give you like 7 DVDs and then whatever, give you too much to swallow at one time. So I cut it out of the rotation, but
what?
Too much to swallow.
Okay.
You know. Because you can't swallow that much.
Because I'm Palestinian.
But I just recently rewatched for the first time since I saw it in theaters, Shutter Island. Martin Scorsese, Leonardo DiCaprio, Mark Ruffalo. Brilliant. Loved it. Yeah.
What about that ending?
Is it better to end your life as a man or continue living as a monster?
Lobotomy. He got lobotomized.
Lobotomy.
And then the movie ended and be like, I want to be sedated.
I want to be sedated. It's just the Ramones.
Oh, the Ramones?
Mm-hmm.
The Ramones.
The Ramones.
Sing that song, the yeah. Ramones.
Uh-huh.
Huh.
What do you want from
me? It's like Hardee's and Carl's Jr., huh?
Yeah. They're the same damn thing.
And what was the other one? Red Lion Pub and Three Lions.
Yeah.
You think they're connected?
They both involve lions.
So let's get to ratings. I can go first.
I need to be prepared because this movie is up there with the likes of Beetlejuice, James and the Giant Peach, The Shadow.
I don't even care for Beetlejuice.
What?
That's like a 2.5.
Damn. Alright, I'll go fucking kill myself.
There's a lot of people who love Beetlejuice. You don't have to go kill yourself.
Yes, I do. My friend doesn't respect my movie taste. He molests the ghost woman.
That's
not. He turns into a snake and wants to marry a 14-year-old.
Beetlejuice.
More like Beetle Gaze.
Timestamp.
Here.
Beetlegeese. Beetlegeese. Goose. Gase.
Beetle used a butthole.
Are you excited for Beetle's use?
No. Zero.
Beetle allows you?
I refuse. I refuse Tim Burton's Beetlejuice 2.
Beetle allows you to.
Beef allows you to. So this is in the world, though, of my 90s life. It mattered.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's a masterpiece, but...
Nostalgic points.
Upon retrospect, it's still pretty effective. So...
That's a good point.
You know, we mentioned during the viewing, it's like, man, remember set directors? Remember production designers? Remember people who had to work to build things?
And they cared.
And they cared how it looked and if it looked nice... Or was intent on delivering the message it was supposed to.
This isn't a Boeing plane.
This isn't missing door hinges.
Yeah, dog.
This is all facets were fucking screwed in.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of outcome, people who worked on this movie gave two shits.
They did.
And that's irrefutable. So just putting that in mind that this is a peak AJ movie, I feel like, in a sense.
Like your favorite comedian, Bill Cosby, said, "It's the proof is in the pudding."
I believe he said it like, "The proof is in the pudding."
Did he die in prison?
No, he's doing a comedy tour this year, I think.
Him and Jared are cellmates, I heard. The Subway guy?
That would make sense. They're probably best friends. They'll probably make a movie of that.
They play chess.
Their friendship in jail, like Shawshank Redemption.
They play chess every day?
Like Shawshank Redemption.
Who's whittling and who's...
Bill Cosby is the black one. And Jared is the Tim Robbins.
Jared, they usually kill pedophiles right away in prison.
They beat them up pretty bad. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that dude, the gymnast...
I think he probably got put into a special area.
The gymnast coach, he's toast. They can't wait to kill him. Well,
wasn't the tagline for something like, the coast is toast?
They can't wait to get him.
I think that's Volcano.
They're going to get him. I might get arrested just to get in there to be able to kill him.
Which one?
The dude, the gymnast, the U.S. gym. Oh. That guy? You know who I'm talking about. You looked him up.
I know his name. I don't know.
You're planning something.
I'm planning to break him out like Magneto. Where I put like metal in a dude's bloodstream that wants to fuck me, and then he can use the metal in the bloodstream and create it. Oh, that's pretty cool. I had those toys. Yeah.
Awesome.
Sorry, just watching Batman Returns McDonald's commercials. So many toys, so little time. There weren't really any toys ever made of this movie either, by the way.
Of Batman and Robin?
Of The Shadow.
Of course not. Mm. Who wants a toy of that?
Well, my brother did dress up as Dick Tracy for Halloween the year that movie came out, so...
I probably would rather be The Shadow than Dick Tracy. Who wants to be Warren Beatty?
You'd rather look like a monster with a red scarf than Warren Beatty?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who got laid more, Alec Baldwin or Warren Beatty?
Warren Beatty.
Really?
I think so.
He seems like such a square, dude.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. He got laid a lot. It's a fact.
He was busting in Bill Cosby roofies.
And fucking Alec Baldwin over here was married to, what you call it?
Yuma?
No, that was Gary Oldman. When Gary Oldman was 32 and Uma Thurman was 19.
We were at the restaurant and you told me Gary Oldman was married to Uma Thurman.
Mm-hmm.
Which just, that's, you know.
It is what it is.
I was attracted to my wife because she was sort of Uma Thurman-esque. Sort of. Not fully.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Go on.
That's it. I'm not going to say anything else for all you, right. Pervert.
Sorry.
I didn't give you any images.
I got all the images I need.
Oh, God.
Sorry, Omar.
Peeping Tom.
You see the teddy bear in the corner?
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry.
You got one of those worm ones that the SWAT teams have? They got the worm where it just goes into...
Yeah, I'm seeing your shit in infrared every night, motherfucker.
You got it in the toilet?
Always.
You seeing those epic shits I'm taking after?
Those sloppy enchilada shits.
So, I can go first.
Yeah, go ahead. Omar's giving me the Kubrick.
No.
Clockwork Orange stare.
I'm at 3 out of 5. Production design. Number one asset of the film. Directing. Alec Baldwin did his best. Everyone tried. There was something missing, though. It's like when me being a Latinx, man.
Yeah, don't gender yourself, please. That'd be racist.
Dating white women. Takes a while for them to figure out. They gotta put a little extra salt in their meals when they're cooking for you. And I feel like The Shadow just was missing a little salt. Just a little. Just a little.
Mm.
Just a little more dazzle. It had a lot of it.
I think a better villain and better chemistry between the actress and the actor, boom.
That might have worked. But it had a lot going for it. But then also there was like some moments where you're just like, okay, what's really going on here? Because you're like in a lot of times you feel like you're in a cozy mansion or like a cozy library with a fireplace and you're enjoying that time, but you're like...
There's so many shots of people having like a glass of whiskey in front of a fireplace in this movie. It just like brings you there, dude. It's just good. A vibe.
Yeah. It reminded me of like Hellboy and stuff. So you could... This was like derivative of the Tim Burton stuff, but I couldn't see how like... I mean, this is one of those where like a lot of movie directors that came after saw this and they took from this also. So this has its stamp. It's not as corny as a Schumacher.
Right.
And it works, but then in some aspects it doesn't work. So it's just like... It's a 3 out of 5 for me. I didn't have that, like as a kid, I caught it a couple times, but it wasn't like, man, it's the same with the Phantom, where it's like, I wanted to love it, but I didn't. And it's still, even now, it still kind of holds up, where it's just like, I kind of want to love it, even as a movie fan. I love the, again, I probably said production design like a million times in this pod, but that's probably the strongest thing. But that holds up the movie. This would probably be a 2 out of 5 if it had like mediocre. You know, it kind of like because the actors, we didn't talk about like a lot of the actors, but a lot of them held up the movie as well,
right?
So 3 out of 5 for me. But 3 out of 5 isn't like I don't know. I never think that's low.
3 is pretty high. I mean, ostensibly. I mean, it thinks you... What a 3 means to me is that you hold something in regard, but maybe it's not something you revisit a lot.
Right.
But you're respecting the fact that it was a hard-to-make movie, it looks good, the acting's decent. It's like a solid movie.
Pretty much all of those aspects.
Know, like, it's a solid movie. Either you like it, you don't like it. Either way... Anyone who loves movies like we do will see the positive and negative aspects.
Yep.
That's like a 3. You know, that's like...
You pretty know. Average.
Yeah, I mean, once you get to even 2.5, I would say you're only talking bad movies if you get to a 2.
Yeah,
like, right. Literally bad. Like
you. Or our last episode, which was a total...
Terminator Salvation, which I think the average was 1 star.
And you think about that. How much money went into it?
I think we said something crazy, like 180 million or something.
The IP, everything.
And it just like didn't do shit.
They totally botched it. They blew it. And something like this, they did not blow it. But it was...
Think of this, dude. You could make... let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4. You can make 5 The Shadows for 1 Terminator Salvation.
Or The Spirit.
Oh, God.
Starring Samuel L. Jackson.
And some guy as The Spirit.
But...
And Eva Mendes' ass on a printer.
This movie. Not the worst. Don't pay a lot of money to see it. Catch it on cable like I did. I don't know.
It'll never be on cable again.
No, you don't think?
I don't think so. I've never, in all my years at post 2002, I've never seen it on TV.
So you think? Do you think people should?
I think it's a rediscovery.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like if you're into this sort of weird, high budget but pulpy material of the 90s, I think it's definitely worth a 9-book Amazon purchase, or maybe you can even find it cheaper at your local. Half-price books or used bookstore, so.
Yeah, well, that's a 3 out of 5 from me. How about you, Bubba?
It's my peak. And I have to say, Shadow is a solid 3 out of 5.
Yeah.
I really can't give it the 3.5. The 3.5 is like a just...
Where you get fish that big?
You seen fish this big?
Sorry, we had real good fish, and I just remembered that. And we wanted to ask the way. They gave us like a foot-long perch.
Haddock.
Oh, haddock.
A.K.A. Hadcock.
Hadcock. And then we were like, where you get this? Where you what? Get fish this big?
Where you gonna shove that fish that big? But I definitely can't give it the 3.5. Maybe it's just like a 3.2 if I'm going to really, you know,
yeah, nitpick if you're it. Into the decimals.
Into the decimals. But overall, I'd say a 3 out of 5 because, yeah, it's just fun. There's plenty of stuff. It's never boring.
No.
I would say. I think
you maybe in the middle.
A little bit where he's just kind of schmoozing with the girl. I don't know. And they're doing that weird thing where she's like changing and he's there and it's, I don't know. I would say most parts with Alec Baldwin and an element of the villains or villains fighting him, all the shadow stuff really works well. It's never really boring. There's enough, even in the boring shit, the shots are so creative that it sort of adds a element to it where you're willing to accept it just because even though somebody's just talking, it looks visually interesting. But overall, it's just not, I mean, you know, this is not... on the level of a Batman or an Indiana Jones or a Star Wars or any of those sort of trifecta that we've illustrated in this podcast of sort of triangulation of elements that add to this. The photography is really sleek and interesting. The directing is really interesting.
And you're aware of just the nostalgic aspect of it.
This is definitely like a, you know, same with Dick Tracy, same with The Rocketeer, same with The Phantom.
Shout out to Mom.
It's kind of weird that that introduction came to me not well before, but just on the cusp of things really breaking out with X-Men, the first X-Men, the Bryan Singer.
Year 2000.
Canceled. Bryan Singer.
Bryan. Beep.
The Sam Raimi Spider-Man.
I just rewatched that in 4K.
Mm.
5 out of 5, baby.
Oh, yeah. You see Willem Dafoe's whole mouth through the screen in his mask.
I love it. I love that movie, dude.
Yeah. Excellent.
I wasn't worried about Willem Dafoe's whole...
What were you worried about? The rain titties?
Toby's. The rain titties.
The rain titties.
The upside down kiss. That's so good, though, dude.
Yeah.
And then, like...
That's a comic book brought to life right
the
there.
The dialogue that Peter has in the hospital... When he says how he feels about Mary Jane, beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Which you still rank Spider-Man above Spider-Man 2? Or
No.
Okay.
They're both 5 out of 5s.
They're both 5 out of 5s, but how do we rank Spider-Man 2 then if the first one is also a, you know, Bonesaw is ready? You know, they're both 5 out of 5s, but everyone agrees Spider-Man 2 is slightly better.
That's a nice outfit. Did your husband pick it out for you?
Gay bashing in the first Spider-Man.
Yeah, technically, but they get away with
it. They get away with it.
My
name's the Human Spider.
It's like, that's terrible.
The Amazing Spider-Man. He refuses to go out. I'm the Human Spider. Shut the fuck up, Peter. Anyway.
Hilarious.
It doesn't reach those levels. It's what the kids these days call mid. But mid. Slightly above that, honestly, in my opinion. They're on that podcast we listen to and never speak of again.
Three out of five?
Holy shit. 3 out of 5.
3 out of 5. So this is your superhero pick.
Did you even read my Shutter Island review?
I did not. It was too fucking long, and I was like...
I'm sorry.
And my shit was, and they're more splatters these days. They're not like long ones, so I can't read all of that. I need short reviews.
You have liked my shortest reviews. Buff chicks make me feel good. Love Lies Bleeding. Anyway.
Love Lies Bleeding. We should end all of our podcasts like Love Lies
Bleeding. Love Lies Bleeding.
This has been Slop Cinema. Love Lies Bleeding.
Love Lies Bleeding. The Shadow knows.
The shad blows. Love lies bleeding. End.